with Aaron, Polly, and Wayne.
I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And this is Wayne.
So, Paul, you're a noted beardsman. You know, you're a guy with a beard.
I am.
Are you somebody who enjoys going and getting a beard trimmed? Do you like to have somebody do that for you?
I enjoy that more than trimming it myself, frankly.
Yeah,
same. I've never had anybody trim mine other than me.
God, it's the best experience in the world.
It really is.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It is such a wonderful experience. It is so pampering. And I truly love it. And yesterday morning, which was the reason why I wasn't available to record on Saturday, I had an appointment with my barber. And she did my beard trim, did my haircut. And I mean, it was just glorious. I mean, I just absolutely love it. It you know, somebody sitting there, you know, rubbing on your face and, you know, whatnot. It was great. So I get up after the haircut and the beard trim. And I'm checking out, you know, her work in the mirror, and I look over and she, you know how they've got the little air hose thing that they use to blow the hair off of you.
Yeah.
She's blowing all this hair off of herself, you know, because all of my hair has gotten onto her black sweater. And I said, it's like you've been petting a dog. And she says, a gray dog.
Oh.
And I said, whoa. Whoa, I don't know where this is coming from, but that is blonde hair.
You're like, I'm finding a new barber.
You need to step off.
Check yourself before you wreck yourself, lady.
Let me just put this tip right back in my billfold.
Yes, Wayne, it is a great experience to just go. I mean, you don't have a beard, though, right? You've got.
No, I've had a beard since probably a decade now.
No, really?
Yeah.
I did No Shave November back way back when Pat was still around, and I've had a beard ever since.
Gosh, it's been a long time since I've seen you visually. Yes, many barber shops are, you know, upscale, you know, man grooming places offer some type of shave. Sometimes it's straight blade, sometimes it's not.
And that's also wonderful as well.
Oh yeah, it's so good. And they do the hot towel treatment to get your pores open and
get up in there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it is better than doing it yourself.
Yeah,
I almost don't want to do it myself, but you know, same. I can't go every week to get my damn.
See, right. I've only even been to a barber once since COVID. I've done my own hair cutting.
Oh dear.
Yeah, it's not good.
That just sounds scary.
I would be terrified to do my own haircut. So
I cut it short. So it's you take the take the trimmer, put the guide on it, and then just cut it all down to short.
Just do the Flobee.
That's so exactly what was on my mind was the Flobee. It's the one that's hooked up to the vacuum cleaner.
Yeah. So it sucks up the hair while it cuts it.
Oh no, my hair goes everywhere. It's horrible.
Yeah, well, you know, when I only grow my beard out during the holidays, and you know, come January, I'll be standing on the deck shaving it down, you know, because it does, the hair goes everywhere. So, anywho, well, yeah, I mean, I just this is the groom cast with Aaron and Polly.
Well, since we're talking about bearded gentlemen, I think this is probably a good time to talk a little bit about Dan Slott, whose appearance totally changed when he grew a beard.
And by the way, friend of the show, Dan Slott.
Yeah.
I noticed that throw a question mark out there.
No, he enjoyed it. He was on the show more than once, wasn't he?
I think just the one time.
Yeah. It was Jeff Parker.
It felt like twice. No,
we love Dan Slott.
I've never been able to look at him the same since that. You remember the Marvel Behind the Scenes show they did?
Yes.
Where they would.
Oh, yeah.
And his episode, I think he was doing a caricature of himself in it, but it was the whole I'm not getting anything done in time, and I'm going to put all this extra work on the artist, and it's been hard to look at him the same since that.
Yeah, but hopefully he's not bringing that methodology to DC, because the current rumor is that Dan Slott is going to be writing some type of Superman book.
I think that's likely, given the picture he released last week before last of him and the two stars from Lois and Superman.
Yeah.
Or so, Superman and Lois, whatever the hell that show's called.
Superman and Lois. Yeah. And Lois.
Yep.
Yeah.
He for another episode.
For one more episode.
I have not watched any of this season. I'm saving it all to binge it all at one time.
Oh, Aaron, you got it. I mean, I haven't watched it. I can't say anything. When is the final episode? Is it? It's this week, I know, but like, what day of the week does it air?
I have no idea.
I think Tuesdays, but I'm not sure either.
Yeah, I'm eager to watch it. I really enjoyed season three, but I'm eager to watch this one.
We don't do appointment TV, Paul. We watch it when it's streaming.
That's right. Not like you oldsters.
I don't do appointment TV except for one show, and it's because if I don't, it'll be ruined on social media for me, and that's Yellowstone.
Have you watched any of this season?
I have.
Wow, I haven't watched a single one.
What? Are you, like, boycotting or waiting?
No, we've been watching other stuff, and, you know, it's on the list, just haven't gotten there yet. There's too much TV to watch.
There is. You know, we finally watched The Bear season 3, so got all caught up on that. I'm halfway through The Penguin. I'll probably finish that one off this week.
I keep trying to motivate myself to watch The Penguin.
It is actually really quite good.
It's what I hear. And I hear that if you enjoyed The Sopranos, you'll probably enjoy The Penguin. But
yeah, I mean, it's just a mob story, right? There's nothing Batman-y about it. But I will say part of me struggles with that.
That it's not Batman-y?
That it's not Batman-y, and that it's a straight up R-rated show, right? Like, right. There's F-bombs and, you know, mature themes that would not be in a DC movie, but
are there boobs?
Not yet. Not as of four episodes in.
You know, don't give me a mature rating and not put any boobs in.
Super interested until I just heard it was like The Sopranos. It's just a mob story and there's no boobs. Because I don't have HBO Max.
Three strikes and you're out.
Penguin. Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, I don't have HBO Max, so I haven't seen any of it. My plan is at some point I will resubscribe, binge, and then unsubscribe again. Probably around the time Peacemaker 2 comes on. And I'll watch the second season of that, and then I'll watch Penguin and get it all done in a month.
I am watching a show right now that I hadn't heard of until this week, but apparently it's been around for a while. It is Those About to Die. It's a Peacock show. It is Swords and Sandals, you know, Spartacus type thing.
That's the Anthony Hopkins one.
Yeah, well, he's only in it for like two episodes. But it's directed and executive produced by Roland Emmerich. And, you know, it is very much in the vein of the Spartacus TV show that you and I enjoyed so much.
Oh, really? I didn't know that show.
And, you know, it's all very much from the Gladiator, you know, sort of perspective, and really well produced. Reminds me of the production value of Rome, the HBO show that I also enjoyed so much. But you know, it's so far it's pretty good. So far it's pretty good. So.
Well, also on Peacock, if you get Peacock, is Twisters, Aaron.
Oh, yeah. No,
it's so good. It's so enjoyable. Highest possible recommendation for Twisters.
So I'm interested in a show coming on Amazon Prime. December 10th is when it starts dropping, called Secret Level.
Yes.
It's an animated show done by a studio that has a ton of credits to it. But each episode is set in the world of a video game, and they're different video games. So they've released trailers for some of the episodes, and the Mega Man one looks really good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that show. Like you said, it's just I don't know how many episodes it is or what all the video games are, but I am interested in the Mega Man one.
Yeah, there's Mega Man, there's Pac-Man, there's Gods of War, Warhammer, Dungeons and Dragons.
And we've totally forgotten about Dan Slott.
we'll come back to Dan Slott in just
will
a
we
moment.
Though? Will
but,
we?
But Paul, I have finally watched Alien Romulus.
Oh,
and you know, the first 10 minutes of the show I hated with everything I had.
Okay.
I because it was very much like, what if the CW made an alien movie? You know, it was very, you know, very teen friendly, and I was just like, God, it's everything I hate about the CW, you know, all in one place. And then the movie got good. I really enjoy the movie, and there are some legit scares in the movie, and I like how they kind of pushed the story forward, even though it's a bit of prequel to Aliens, post Alien, and also, ties into the previous prequel movies. I thought it was really well done. I just, my objection to the movie when I first started watching it was how young the cast was, and how they all had adult problems,
Most of them die anyway.
Well, and that's the good news.
The good news is they're not around for that long.
I hope they bring those two characters back in, because I know they're already working on a second movie.
Yes.
Or an additional movie. I hope they bring those two characters back I hope they bring one of those characters back because I really enjoyed Andy the Android. Mm-hmm. I thought I can't say that he was a lot of fun. I just thought his character was super interesting. And the fact that they brought a character back from the original Alien movie was amazing. I really enjoyed the movie, and I'm glad that I was able to muscle my way through the first, 10, 15 minutes that I found so annoying. Yeah. It was good. It's good.
Definitely worth watching. I mean, is it as good as Twisters? Probably not, but,
Oh my God. We may never know.
I will know, Aaron. Uh-huh. I will know.
Yeah. So Dan Slott.
Oh yeah. So Dan Slott. Yeah. So like we said, the rumor is that he'll be taking over one of the Superman books. We don't know which one, though. Action Comics.
Or it could be a new title. You never know.
It could be a new title. But the rumors are heating up because Jorge Jimenez, who is the current artist on Batman. And we know that, with Chip Zdarsky, and we know Chip Zdarsky's run is coming to an end because Jim Lee and Jeff Loeb are doing Hush 2. And he's been posting pictures of young Jonathan Kent again on social media. And we're like, and so people are wondering if the two are tied. And I don't know how I feel about that. I felt pretty strongly when they aged up Jonathan, anti it. And, now aging him back down feels like too much has happened.
Yeah.
To undo that.
I don't know how you put that genie back in the bottle, restore him to a place of, prepubescent innocence. I just don't know how you do that.
Yeah, especially when he has established relationships and.
Yeah.
He's had the sex.
I mean, is it like an episode of Big? Is he all of a sudden, Tom Hanks returned to his child form? I don't know. I mean, I think that adds a whole lot more complication. How do you take someone who's got an adult relationship with an adult romantic relationship with another person, and then all of a sudden he is, preteen? I don't know how you do that.
Yeah, I don't. And I also don't know that I have much of an interest in them telling a story set in a prior time period either.
Yeah.
Those things are just. That's like when they tried to do Super Sons after they aged him up. But, they're like, oh, this is set a few years back. I'm like, eh.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think that a story, untold stories of, Jonathan Kent, as a young man or as a child, there's just not enough space there. We kind of saw everything, you know, and
he didn't have that much time with his powers before he was aged up.
Right. Exactly. And, how interesting can his time, with what's his name? Overman or whatever. Ultraman.
Yeah.
Be worthwhile. I mean, no thank you. So I'm curious as to what they'll do there.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. So we'll see. I'm assuming some announcement will be coming during the month of December.
I do think it's likely that Dan Slott's come in this direction. And, that begs the question, the last great big Marvel guy to come over prior to Jason Aaron was Brian Michael Bendis. And that was not particularly successful. And I think, Dan Slott is terrific on Spider-Man.
It would be funny if Dan Slott came in and immediately undid something Bendis did, though.
Well, and wouldn't that be great? But, he does have experience writing Superman because he wrote the animated series.
Yeah, books, and actually did a damn good job. Yeah. Those are great books.
Yeah. Yeah. So I do feel like he's got a good track record coming over.
Yeah, Aaron, I will beg to differ on Spider-Man, where I think he is both incredible and horrible.
Well, I jumped off a whole lot earlier than you did. Yeah, you know, so I only had the good memories.
His best Spider-Man was the Doc Ock Spider-Man. Anytime he was writing a Spider-Man that wasn't Peter Parker, it's incredible.
Well, I enjoyed all the way up through, what was that, Spider Island? And I think that's where I jumped out.
I forgot about that story. That was a good storyline.
Yeah, and I mean, everything up to that, I mean, I have really good memories of, but, you know, it just got to a place where I was like, nah, I think this is a good jumping off spot for me.
Yeah, he ended very weakly.
Yeah. Well, and that happens. I mean, when you don't take a writer off at the right time, it does just kind of peter out. So,
yeah,
it's unfortunate.
Well, you know, let's talk about what's going on in the Superman books right now, though. You know, Superman number 20 came out this week. And Wade, remind me, are you reading Superman, Joshua Williams, Superman Williamson's?
Yeah, I was on the fence after last issue. I hated what they did with Doomsday. But I did go ahead and give this one a shot too, and keep going.
Okay. And Aaron, you read this book as well?
I did.
This book was very sad to me because Parasite got torn in half.
That was pretty gruesome. And I was laying in bed reading it, and I went, "Oh my!" And my wife's like, "What?" And I said, "They tore Rudy in half." And, you know, Rudy. She, of course, thought it was the football movie I was talking about.
Rudy. I actually really enjoyed this issue, but I enjoyed the prior issue. You two had more issues with the prior issue than I did, so I'm curious more about your thoughts.
Well, I enjoyed the storytelling in the book. I am torn with – I really dislike a smart talking Doomsday. Even a Doomsday that has evolved up over time to be smart and talking. You know, the fact that you've got, you know, Doomsday narrating part of the story irritates the tar out of me.
And add to that irritation that I like the Time Trapper as a Legion of Superheroes villain.
Yeah.
And I hate them changing him into Doomsday.
But if you were to skin over Doomsday the Time Trapper and make it anybody else saying those exact same lines, I think it's a great story. And that's what I found, you know, really challenging about it, was that I thought the setup was really great. I thought the, you know, the efforts with Doomsday were super cool. I question, hey, let's just sedate Doomsday and that'll be fine. I mean, it doesn't take a tactician like Batman to know that that's a really bad idea.
Well, and in fairness, they know it's a bad idea.
Yeah, but I mean, where could you possibly keep him that it's not going to be horrible when that wears off?
Yeah, he has escaped hell.
Yeah.
Literal hell.
But I'm intrigued by the rest of the story, and I have to say I'm very much enjoying the Lois as Superwoman storyline. Yeah. So there's a lot here to like, and the artwork's gorgeous in this book.
So I do want to ask about something.
Yeah.
Just in the, you know, because you're talking about sedating Doomsday and, you know, that scene. So there's a scene in this book where Superman loses his shit.
Uh-huh.
And just starts beating the hell down on Doomsday. And his eyes are glowing all red and his veins are like glowing and stuff like that. And Lois goes, "Oh no, not again." And I'm like, did I miss something?
I think this is some untold elements of the story that are going to be revealed later on.
Okay. Like how she got her powers.
Correct.
Okay.
See, what I thought it was just kind of a reference back to he gave everything and died fighting Doomsday the first time. And that's what she's afraid is happening, is that he's going to throw everything into this fight and die again.
Yeah.
I don't know, because it said his red levels are rising. And
Exactly.
But although I do think I remember something like that happening earlier in this arc and he lost his powers after. I don't know. I'd have to revisit what, you know, something earlier in this arc to see if that was a reference to that. I could see it either way. I could see it your way too, Wayne. But it was the fact that he just literally lost his shit and, you know, the glowing red eyes and, you know, they're like his red levels are rising and he's just ready to, you know, he became angry. I thought that's what that scene was supposed to illustrate, and I just don't recall what it could be referencing.
Yeah, I will say there's one other line I hated in this, because I hate when they do this in time travel stories. Doomsday having the comments about, you know, oh, you haven't lost your eye yet.
Yeah.
So Zod hasn't returned. And it's like, I hate that type of foreshadowing when it is just we're going to throw out all this stupid stuff that's going to irrevocably change the character until we retcon it. And let's just say this is all going to happen.
Yeah, because Superman losing an eye is just kind of a dumb thing. Like, I, you know, like it's like when Aquaman lost his hand. Like, OK,
I loved it when Aquaman lost his hand.
It just felt like, in retrospect, things like that just feel dumb to me. Like, oh, we're going to make Spider-Man have six arms. Like, you know, the shit's not going to stick. So,
but,
like,
you know, Aquaman's hook hand stayed around for a great long time.
It did. It did. That's probably a worse example.
It but, is. Like, Superman, it's a bad example, yeah. Paul, and you're a bad podcaster.
Yeah, a hero, a hero with a secret identity losing a body part kind of kills the secret identity.
There is that. It's kind of like when superheroes reveal their secret identity to the world, you know.
Brian Michael Bendis.
Brian Michael Bendis and Dan Slott. Like, it just gets put back in the box at some point. So, like, I don't know. The Superman losing an eye just feels like a silly twist to me.
Yeah, I love all the stuff with Lois, but I hated that. I hated everything with Future Smart Doomsday. His dialogue, him, the fact that it's Time Trapper. If it were, like you were saying, Aaron, if it were a different villain that's a new time travel villain or something, I wouldn't have had as many issues with it, I think.
Yeah, my only issue was the you know, Smart Doomsday. I just think Smart Doomsday is a tremendously bad idea. The core concept of Doomsday is he's a force of nature, you know, and it's like fighting the wind. You know, he is just always, no matter how much you throw at it, no matter how much energy you expend, it's still going to be there. And there's no reasoning with it. It just keeps coming. And that is what makes Doomsday so scary. And the fact that if you do win, you won't be able to beat him the same way next time because he will have evolved to beat that solution. Yep. And I mean, I love that about Doomsday. And the fact, the minute you make Doomsday talk and reason, you've lost the core of the character. And, you know, he's just stupid at that. I mean, it's a dumb idea at that point.
Like Superman losing an eye.
I kind of like the idea. I kind of like the idea of gray-templed Superman walking around with an eye patch, you know, or a scar that doesn't heal, you know, something that, like Cable, you know.
In an alternate reality or Elseworlds future story.
Yeah.
Just absolutely. Not in a regular story.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to say for Doomsday, though, Superman and Lois, I don't know if you've seen any of the pictures of their Doomsday. For going up near the finale, they have really made him look comic accurate. Mm. Like, he has been evolving as he dies throughout the show to get to the point where he looks just like the comic version now.
Yeah,
that's cool. Well, I want to talk about the craziest thing for Superman issue 20, and that's that Dan Mora drew that book and Justice League Unlimited number one, and they both came out in the same week.
That's crazy. And they're both gorgeous.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, he's embraced digital art. It doesn't, you know, not in the same way that, like, Stepan Sejic, when he was doing Witchblade and all those books back then. You know, this feels like hand-drawn, hand-inked, but, you know, I don't think this guy could knock out this many books, big level books, big action books, without digital assistance.
Yeah,
good but stuff. What do you think about Justice League Unlimited number one?
I'm opening it back up because I had this fear that I'm going to conflate stuff from the question that I read last week with stuff from Justice League Unlimited because they kind of sync up, right?
Yeah.
I liked this book. I love the artwork in it. I'm always amused anytime Airwave shows up. I remember when Airwave was first introduced back in the late 70s, early 80s. He was introduced in a backup issue, I want to say, of The Brave and the Bold, if I'm not mistaken. It may have been Action Comics, but he is actually a Texas-based superhero. Huh. You know, he's kind of like exactly what you see on the page here, is that he's just kind of, you know, nerdy and whatnot. Not very heroic, but I don't think that was ever the intent when he was first created. But
he certainly captured someone's attention because he was used pretty well in that last big storyline with Amanda Waller too.
Yeah, absolutely. I just always get a kick out of him because he's just, you know, such a third rate sort of, you know, character design. But, you know, somebody loves him somewhere. that he keeps showing up. And like I said, I'm going to conflate some of the stuff from the question because there are things I don't get in the current DC Comics universe, following up from the Amanda Waller issue. And it's the new Watchtower and how they could have just built the thing, but there's already something going wrong. And so we appoint the question as chief of security, you know, on the superhero space station to handle the, you know, this investigation, because something's up on the Watchtower. Someone's trying to break in. And it bugs me that, you know, they just opened up and someone's trying to break in. I don't get that. I really don't understand why it would be acceptable to have all of this power resting in one place. And like the minute they open the doors, someone's trying to break in. I don't get it. It seems like maybe this is a story that should have happened. Maybe, I don't know, 12 issues down the line. I don't know.
That's my frustration. I feel like that's probably something more from the question book.
Uh-huh.
Just because this more focuses on, you know, there's this battle on Earth where they're, you know, with Superman and the team, and Airwave kind of helps save the day, but at the end he's like, I'm going to have to kill everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big focus on Airwave, focus on, was it Star Sapphire?
Yes.
Yeah, a big focus on some of the, you know, minor characters in other books and giving them a place to shine kind of thing, mm-hmm. which I tend to like. That's what I want out of a Justice League Unlimited book, is I want to see the heroes that are like second and third stringers getting a chance to get developed more.
I enjoy seeing all the heroes on the page about this book. You get a lot of time with Superman in the book. But, you know, let's talk about what a dick the Flash is. You know, Airwave just shows up and he's looking around, and all of a sudden the Flash grabs him and gives him a high speed tour. Doesn't prep him, doesn't say, hey, is this OK? He just zip zaps him across the station at, you know, near light speed. I that seems like kind of an asshole sort of move.
Yeah, I'm expecting him to puke at any moment.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and, you know, he very nearly does. I don't get that. I liked the book a lot. I know it's more of the question book. Did you read the question, Paul?
I did not. Is it worth reading?
It's a good book. It's a good book. It's very Rene Montoya focused, and I really love Rene Montoya as the question.
Yeah, I bought it, but I haven't read it yet.
But it reminds me of Deep Space Nine and Odo, because, you know, she is the constable of the space station. And, you know, while I enjoy that feel, it just seems strange to me that you would have a policing organization on the Justice League satellite. That just seems weird. You know, how are you going to police the space station, for the Justice League? And I understand that, you know, Batman and Superman decided that they needed her to investigate this thing because someone's trying to get into the space station. but it just that concept just seems wrong to me, you know, and it just seems wrong. But anyway, I did like it. And the Dan Mora artwork on JLU is just fantastic.
It is. So. It is. I mean, I enjoyed it enough to continue mm-hmm. with it. I just honestly, it kind of still has that stink of absolute power to me.
Yep.
In that there's just so much going on that.
Yeah. And especially, you know, like on the page, even the artwork is great, but it was so active.
Yeah.
It's like, very give dynamic. Me a moment to there's breathe.
There's a lot going on the page. A lot going on.
And I have to think about, you know, previous I was actually just looking at it, like previous Justice League number ones. Because I think the most recent Justice League number one was the Scott Snyder one, mm-hmm. which honestly had a pretty strong start. You know, before that we had
The Bendis one in there, didn't you?
Oh, that's right. I forgot about the Bendis one.
Yeah,
probably for the best.
Yeah, yeah. There was a Bendis one, and there was a the Geoff Johns one. And then before the Geoff Johns one, there was the the first issue by, what was the guy's name? The guy who did Identity Crisis.
Oh, Brian Meltzer?
Yeah, Brian Meltzer.
Brad Meltzer.
And I feel like, if I'm being honest, all of those were stronger number ones than this. So,
I wouldn't say the Jeff Johns one, because
the Jeff Johns one was, the Jeff Johns Jim Lee Justice League number one was not great, but that story, but it got good. You know,
there has not been a Justice League book in a great long while that I thought was worthwhile.
Yeah, fair.
You know, you're like, I did not care for the new 52 Justice League. I did not care for, I didn't care for the Bendis Justice League was terrible. You know, I think it's been since before Meltzer's run that I've enjoyed Justice League. You know, I always try it because I always want to like it, but I usually buy a couple of issues and then I drop out. I like this enough that I'm going to be in for the next issue. But you know, I'm hoping that we get some of these big mysteries resolved fairly quickly. I don't want it to be an entire series that's, you know, around the mystery.
Yeah,
you know, agreed. let's make it an arc and move on, you know. But, you know, and I do feel like we build these structures, you know, up over the earth just so that we can destroy them later on.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, how long before they blow up the satellite, you know?
It's just a matter of time, really.
Yeah, exactly. But, you cannot go wrong with the artwork. I mean, golly, this artwork is just stunning.
It is. It is. Dan Moore is just doing the best work of his career right now.
Yeah. So, absolute Wonder Woman.
Did you like it as much as the first issue?
I did. I liked this book a lot. I thought it was a nice continuation of issue one without... I appreciate that they had enough faith to know that you read issue one, that you understood issue one, that you remember issue one, because there wasn't a lot of retreading of the origin in this book. It was just a continuation of what you read in issue one. And I think these books are so well textured. Of everything that I've read lately, I feel like Absolute Wonder Woman is going to have the most rereadability. I know that's only based on two issues, but I do love how, you know, it's very textured. The story keeps pushing forward. Like I said, there's no restating of the origin in the second issue, so you're not wasting any time. I love it. I love it.
Oh, go ahead, Wayne.
I was going to say, I didn't enjoy it as much as the first issue. I was really into that first issue. This one, I don't know if it's just the pace change, but I didn't get drawn into it the same way I did that first issue.
I liked it just as much. I mean, I think the thing about this Wonder Woman book to me, and we'll see where it goes, and maybe none of these books will tie together during their first arcs, but this Wonder Woman book feels wholly and entirely removed from the rest of the Absolute universe to me.
Yep.
Like, I feel like Absolute Batman and Absolute Superman could take place in the same universe.
Yeah, especially Superman, because he's on the down low. He's not a public figure yet.
Yeah.
And she mentions in this book that there will be other heroes.
Yeah. And so maybe they're just different timing or whatever. But this Absolute Wonder Woman definitely feels like, to me, it almost feels like its own graphic novel. You know, its own side story. It feels a little more elseworldly to me, but not in a bad way. I think the book is fantastic. I like that it's kind of like taking inspiration from video games like God of War and stuff like that for me, you know, and that you've got Wonder Woman versus a creature, a kaiju, essentially, that's the size of a building. You know, and I find that, you know, visually, that's super stunning. I think the art really sells it effectively in a way that's not hokey, and it's also not... It's not your normal, you know, four color comic book. You know, it's artistic. It's scary. You know, the creature's imposing, coming out of the fog on the harbor. So I really dig this book, and I'm very curious to see what they do with it, and I'm very curious how they tie these three characters together at some point.
I'm really curious how Steve Trevor got to hell.
Mm-hmm.
That especially because he thinks he's dead and she makes it sound like he's not, and then he is back on Earth later, so I don't know what happened there.
And I do love the fact that he's like, I didn't think this is where I was going. I thought I'd go to the other place instead of hell. And she goes, yeah, sometimes people just wind up here. Yeah. I'm like, well, that's concerning.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I loved was the whole conversation around Pegasus.
Mm-hmm.
The, you know, what's his name? Pegasus. You named your Pegasus Pegasus? No, he is Pegasus.
Yeah, I got a kick out of that.
Yeah. As well.
Kelly Thompson writes this book. What do we know Kelly Thompson from? I'm not familiar with the writer.
I've heard the name before. Mm-hmm. I don't recall what I may have read. I know she wrote Captain Marvel. She's written a lot of Marvel. So she's written like Captain Marvel, A-Force. She did some Jessica Jones stuff. But nothing that I'm familiar with.
I think what I'm responding to so much in this book is that while the Wonder Woman in the Absolute books, it has some of the core origin elements, she is so entirely different than the Wonder Woman we've seen in the regular DC Comics books, and really different from the Wonder Woman that we have seen in the Elseworlds books. It is really a very different interpretation of the character and the character's environment. And I mean, even the uniform she wears, you know, she's not walking around in, her swimsuit. She is, you know, wearing warrior's garb. I mean, I really enjoy not just the design elements of what she wears, but the design elements of all the things around her. And I love the fact of how she is drawn, how she herself, her face, you know, she's not just a pretty woman. She's got these very Hellenistic sort of qualities about her, really rooting her into that Greek tradition. I this book is so well put together, not just from the writing, but also from the artwork and the layout. It's just super satisfying. And the Cthulhu elements in the, you know, the kaiju monsters opposition, you know, we've got the Tetracide coming and, you know, holy crap. He's huge. Yeah,
he's huge.
You know, I'm truly digging this story.
You know, yeah. Aaron, if you're enjoying it this much, maybe you should join us on Absolute Batman.
Not going to happen, my friend. Not going to happen.
So good. So good.
Sorry.
Well, when Santa brings you Absolute Batman issues 1, 2, and 3 under your Christmas tree this year, I expect you to read them.
I must have been a bad boy.
And we're like, what's this call in my stocking?
It'll be right next to Spaceman.
Well, so, Paul.
Yes, sir.
Detective Comics issue. Yes. What issue is this?
1091.
1091. Talk to me about it, Paul. Talk to me about it.
So this is the second issue of the Tom Taylor, Michael Janine arc on Detective Comics. And, you know, the first one had really established this, this past storyline with Thomas Wayne and, you know, how he saved Joe Chill. But it had also established in the present day how Bruce was, you know, a childhood friend who is the daughter of, I think, a criminal that his father saved or something like
Joe Chill. It's Joe Chill's daughter.
Oh, it's Joe Chill's daughter. Okay. So Joe Chill's daughter, that's what it was. Joe Chill's daughter has now been working on a serum that it's like an anti-aging serum. But like
it's a fountain of youth serum.
Fountain of youth serum that, you know, can undo the damage that being Batman for years has done. And, you know, after weighing the options and talking to Superman, which I'd have very strong thoughts on that Superman scene. He decides to go for it. And, you know, and it's kind of, you know, the book talks a little bit about how it has affected his body and stuff like that, and how it is starting the anti-aging, you know, Fountain of Youth process. This is basically what Tom Taylor does. You know, you read this book, and this book, you know, some artists, or excuse me, writers have such a distinct voice that you can tell without even reading the cover who's writing the book.
Right.
For me, I could tell all day long this was a Tom Taylor book. Mm-hmm. It had big action, fun rapport, you know, a lot of self reflection, you know, and questioning and you know, I think the book is great. I will say, you know, I was talking about the Superman scene. I liked the Superman scene, but boy, do I hate the way this artist drew Superman.
And I hated the way he drew the gargoyle that they're standing on. I mean, that doesn't look so much as a gargoyle as it looks like a zombie coming off I mean, I was just like, who the hell designs that in their architecture?
Yeah, this
and why thing. Are they? Why are Batman and Superman standing out on top of this, you know, gargoyle thing when there's a perfectly good roof right there? I don't understand why they wander out to the head of this thing. I'm just like, why are they standing there when there's that, you know, rooftop balcony right there?
Well, I mean, why are they talking in person to Batman. Begin with? They could just be texting each other.
Yeah, Batman can't resist standing on a gargoyle.
Superman ought to be saying, who the hell designed, what's wrong with you people in Gotham that you designed a gargoyle that looks like this? This is scary.
It does. It looks like a zombie woman hanging off of a building. Uh-huh. But maybe he was too busy focused on his incredibly long super neck. That's like double the size of his head. His neck is so long. I could not stop looking at it.
See, his neck was rocketed. Any of this when I read it, but now that you guys are pointing it out, I can't not see it.
His neck was rocketed to Earth from the dying planet Krypton, getting imbued powers from Earth's yellow sun, so that it is more necky than other necks.
Maybe it's like they stretched him out to make him taller, like
taffy.
It is such an incredibly long neck. It was I totally got lost in that neck during the scene, to the point that I missed the giant naked zombie lady hanging off of the building that they're talking
on. There is a scene where Batman and Superman are talking, and you know, Superman's sitting on the rail of the rooftop, and there is this foreshortening that is like his hand sitting on his knee is huge in the frame, right? And, you know, it's foreshortened and, you know, his body is much smaller behind it. And I'm like, what kind of freak is Superman? You know, he's got that great big claw hand, because it doesn't even look like it's resting on his knee, even though that's what it's doing. It looks like it's reaching out because it's so fucking huge.
There are some for no good reason. Issues. And it's really only in that scene, because the rest of the book is beautiful.
Yeah,
but I'm just scene like, what I struggled
the
with.
Fuck is going on with his Elephant Man hand? You know?
I enjoy the conversation in the scene, though, because I always love when one of the two will go to the other for advice. I like those just conversation moments that are not superhero related, just two friends having the conversation.
Well, and I do like that, you know, Batman uses Superman for free healthcare. You know, he didn't have to call and get his visit to the radiologist approved by his health plan. He just had Superman, you know, eyeball his knee, you know, with his X-ray vision. This is how rich people stay rich, by the way. They don't spend unnecessary money on copays. They go to Superman and have him X-ray their knee.
I will have to say, I have never felt more in tune with Batman, never thought, you know, I understand this character more than when he lands on the car and his knee gives out a little bit.
Yeah.
No, I now can relate to Batman.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I'm like, yeah, I got you there. You know, I feel you, Batman, in my right knee every day. Every day.
I will say my only issue with this book, I always have something, right? Well, other than Superman's neck, my only issue with the actual book is, this is going to sound weird, but like that they introduced another new villain. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it feels like every writer that comes onto Batman has to introduce some new villain that cuts to the core of Batman's youth. You know, something that happened to Bruce Wayne when he was a child. And, you know, and it's like, do we need that again? Like, can't you just bring the Scarecrow in? Like, could this just be a Scarecrow story? You know, like, Batman has the most iconic rogues gallery, but every writer just decides, hey, you know, I want to introduce this new villain that Batman didn't know was his best friend when he was a child. Or, you know, that Joe Chill had a daughter. And I'm sure that's going to go awry. It's not going to go well, you know.
One of my concerns is somebody develops this serum. You know, it's a youth serum. By all means, Bruce Wayne, let's inject that right away. You know, I'm like, you know, I just watched this movie Romulus. Similar thing here.
Well, you know, Batman has had issues before with injecting a serum.
Uh-huh.
With like the Venom serum. And
it's going to turn him into Croc. You know?
Yeah, I had that thought of, you know, I understand the desire, but you would think it's Batman. He's going to sneak in, get a sample of it, and evaluate it.
Yeah, which would be the Batman thing to do, right? Yeah.
Instead, it looks like he's going to do that with his own blood.
Yeah. But it just seems like a little too late. Because I feel like he's doing the sample from his blood so that he can create something to make it ready for the masses. Because that's a big discussion in the book between Superman and Batman is, you know, Batman's feeling a little privileged by having this, you know, resource available to him. And Superman says, I know you're going to figure out a way to make this available to everybody. And so I figured that's what the blood work is for. That he the secret blood work in the Batcave is for, you know, so he can figure out how to, you know, mass produce. But, you know, we're obviously going to find out that this is terrible, you know, that it's either made from babies or babies and puppies or, you know, it's going to turn him into something terrible. Maybe both. I don't know. But I am enjoying the book, but there is this Elseworlds quality to the book. I mean, I kept adjusting my perspective on the book. I'm like, no, this is real DC, main DCU, Gotham City. This is not an Elseworlds book. But there was a tone in the book, and I don't know if that's just me or if you guys had any inkling of that as well. But it just felt like this isn't our universe, right? Am I just imagining that? Because I didn't get
that vibe, but.
Yeah, I didn't either.
There was something about the book, particularly, you know, it opens up with that sequence with the Joker. He wakes up from this dream, and I'm just like, you know, is this foreshadowing? Is this, is this something that we haven't seen? It felt otherworldly, you know, like it wasn't rooted in what we were doing. But I just had that strange feeling.
Yeah, I think part of it for me, maybe it's just because it's the only book you read this week, not drawn by Dan Mora.
Maybe
Dan Mora just needs to draw all DC books so that you know they're in the same universe.
All DC books everywhere.
Yeah, because I think the DC universe itself, and this is not necessarily a complaint, it's more an observation. You know, they're in this now all in era of DC, mm-hmm. But there's not necessarily, in my mind, a connective thread. A collective interpretation of the same character across multiple books that has tied, you know, that's tying it together as one universe. Like, you know, what's happening in Batman is very different than what's happening in Detective Comics. It's very different than with the Batman that we see in Justice League Unlimited. Even the Superman books, you know, Superman's been trapped in the Phantom Zone for quite a while in Action Comics, you know, and there's no reference of Superwoman. But, you know, there's Superman and Superwoman in the other book. So there's not a lot of, you know, every book is kind of operating independently, which is, again, not a complaint. I think it's just it lends itself to maybe like, OK, where does this take place? Is this even in the same universe that this other book is taking place in? You know, and on top of it, you have the Absolute books, which are definitely in an alternate universe.
Yeah, I'd say for this book is the first Batman book in a while I've been really enjoyed. I've been out of Batman for a bit. It's nothing has really brought me back in until this, and I am loving the story. And unlike you, Paul, I love the idea of Joe Chill's daughter having been, you know, saved and hidden away by his father. And I like that connection. I like the new villain that I like what the villain's doing. I don't think I would have gotten the same if it were, say, Scarecrow.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I have no. In the end, it's more concerns other than the genuine complaint about Superman's neck. The rest is more just concerns about the storyline. But, you know, Tom Taylor, he rarely steers me wrong. So I enjoyed every book I read this week.
Yeah, they were pretty good. Pretty good. Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, Absolute Superman number 2 comes out next week. Speaking of Absolute books and Superman, so Absolute Superman number 2 from Jason Aaron and Rafa Sandoval comes out. We also get new issues of Batman, Detective Comics, and JSA from DC. From what is this? Titan Comics, I guess. We get the fourth and final issue of Conan, Battle of the Black Stone.
Nice.
So that crossover will end next week. And from Mad Cave Studios, which I didn't know was happening, that Dick Tracy book has been turned into an ongoing series.
No.
And so issue 6 comes out next week.
Interesting.
Yeah, pretty psyched about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I have hopped off of the Flash Gordon book and the
Defenders of the Earth. But
Defenders of the Earth, yeah, I've hopped off of both of those. But I would go back to Dick Tracy. You know me, I love Dick. but yeah, I'll check on those. Sounds like a pretty decent week.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
very good. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books, what you think about the absolute and all-in books over DC Comics. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. We use your comments on the show. You could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOMGeek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
What a deal. You guys go out and have a great week and read some comic books.
We will catch you next week.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.